I think this should all be basic, and this should be, you know, what, you know, in federal hiring, what we learn in elementary school, so to speak. But I think actually therein lies some of the problem, which is we've kind of decided to skip over elementary school and go directly to graduate school on a lot of things, and hope that this just all happens by magic. So I think that's actually one reason to focus on really recruitment 101 and what are some of the basics. I think the second piece of it is really the environment that we're now living in. I actually think forces us, or should focus, to go back to the basics a little bit and ensure, again, if regardless of what proposal you look at, regardless of what agency you're looking at, you've got some constraints on you. Is it hiring constraints? Is it budget constraints? All of those may impact the way that you recruit and hire. Given that, time to reevaluate and make sure that if we have limited budget, if we have limited slots to hire for, that we're actually making the right decisions.
You write that chief human capital officers are getting the importance of the quality in addition to just the quantity and the speed. You write one chief human capital officer stated quick and bad is not the solution, and the conversations that I've had with Chicos, they're saying the same thing. Talk about the difficulty, though, in emphasizing quality through a faster process, because it's not just saying, well, we're just going to look for good people.
Yeah, again, exactly right with that. I think, you know, part of the challenge with the quality piece of it, particularly in the context of the speed piece of this, is simply a volume issue to some extent, which is, you know, when agencies are inundated with thousands of applications for a single position, or even hundreds of applications for a single position, without the right infrastructure in place, it's really very difficult. And that infrastructure may be systems and structures. That infrastructure may simply be the right people involved in the process as well. It's really hard to get to the quality issue quickly. And again, some of it's really based on simply the number of applications that we get. So I think part of the focus and really what I write about is, you know, really encouraging the hiring managers, and not simply encouraging them, but requiring and mandating that they be involved in the process very early on to help define specifically what you want. I think ultimately, Francis, if we take a step back, and I actually tell a little bit of a personal story in here as well, that, you know, I recently had one of my own staff members leave. And it wasn't until, you know, a few days after she left that I actually said, what do I really need for this position? I was thinking of it really in terms of this is what she was doing rather than this is what I need, and therefore how do I screen for that? And I think that's a routine that we all frequently fall into, which is somebody leaves or we have a new opening and we simply say, okay, what did the last person bring to the table? We need to really focus on not necessarily what did the last person bring to the table, but what do we need going forward as well?
Is there a balance there, though? I mean, is it – you should probably be considering what the responsibilities of the person that left are, but just not letting them dictate what the qualities are that you're going to try to find in somebody who is going to segue to the new level, the new set of responsibilities?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And in fact, one of the comments that came in after this post that I made actually said, you know, it was from a former HR person. And the comment that she made was that, you know, very early on when she recognized that somebody was leaving, and had announced that they were leaving, she'd actually sit down with the hiring manager and not say, okay, what are the competencies, what are the skills that you need with this, some things that may not, in fact, resonate with the hiring manager, but she said, you know, what did you most like about Francis? What did Francis bring to the table? What did he bring in his briefcase or, you know, in his backpack every day that you want to make sure this next person brings in the door with them as well? And that was a way to put it in terms that the hiring manager actually understood and did still put it in the context of what did they value about the employee that was actually about ready to head out or had just headed out the door as well.
Something else that you're writing about in this piece that I find pretty interesting is you write, if you've done your job well, you will know your needs before any staff opening occurs and have a better chance to make a quality hire when the unexpected opening occurs. Is there enough succession planning that goes on in the federal government, do you think?
Probably not. And again, I'd go back, Francis, particularly given where we are right now in the current environment of why that's even more important. Again, you know, there's proposals floating, there's legislation that's probably floating as well around, you know, for every three people that leave, we're only able to hire one person. In some cases, you know, there are hiring freezes completely, or only being able to hire for certain mission critical occupations. With all of those types of constraints and restrictions that are in place or may be in place in the future, it's even more important that we actually think about succession planning. So if you're going to lose three people and you know that you're going to only be able to hire one in their place, you better darn well give some thought now as to what that one position is that you really need. Because if you're not, you know, ultimately one person's not going to be able to do the job of three, and somewhere along the line something's not going to get done.
I talked to an HR consultant not too long ago who said, I was talking to a client about succession planning, and the client said, it seems ghoulish, it feels ghoulish to me to think about, try to like handicap who might leave and what those skill sets might be that would need to be replaced. And the consultant responded to that person, your organization will be more dead if you don't do it than if you do it. And so that trade-off there about what things feel like rather than what they really are is really, I think is really interesting.
It is. And again, Francis, I think it's something that too often we actually take the tack that it is ghoulish and therefore we shouldn't do it, or we have to tread lightly on it. And again, I think, you know, if we're having those open we had this conversation, I think, a few weeks ago about just having that open, candid conversation with employees about, you know, what are they thinking? Where's their head right now? Do they plan on staying a while? Clearly, we can't hold them to any of those conversations. But that's part of being a good manager, is understanding where your employees are, what's motivating them, what's engaging them, what they don't see as satisfactory right now. And that's actually the way not only can you possibly hold on to them, but for those that are imminently going to be leaving anyway, it gives you a much clearer heads up to say, you know what, I actually need to keep an eye on this and be preparing for it as I'm looking at future openings down the line. But again, I don't want to lose that other piece of that conversation either, Francis, which is having those conversations is a way to actively engage your employees currently, and may just prove to be the vital conversation to holding on to somebody who otherwise has one foot out the door.